university.
I'm not out of here. I'm just bringing the other participants down
okay.
real quick.
Yeah. There's a question up here for a long time. I want
to... You can address it.
Do you think that just providing accurate information is sufficient, or do you really think we have to just leave it safe and people into this?
Well...
I know we're all educated.
That's
what
Well, it depends. For those who don't have religious problems going into it, it's great that they have all the scientific information and they don't have a problem learning about it, and it may very well strengthen their reasoning behind their acceptance. But if someone is religiously predisposed to reject evidence, it becomes very difficult to even learn about the new evidence, because you may have even been told that they're going to lie to you in this way. And then, sure enough, they did. You wanted to say something about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, just to connect them sort of to a couple of issues is that, I mean, often the people who connect to the largest segments of Muslim societies are actually the imams,
mm-hmm.
people who are actually, you know, giving the weekly sermon, Friday weekly sermons. And it seems to me like it would be really interesting to survey them, actually.
And see what
they would say in that context. And my experience, actually, just from my connection to people and also going, you know, just YouTube clips and this and whatever, mm-hmm. probably, I mean, it seems to me like the literacy in evolution is so bad that when they say evolution or evolutionary theory or Darwin's theory, it seems to me like they don't even know what they're referring to. What they refer to is this misconception that's the poster of our symposium. That's what they mean.
Yes.
Darwin's theory, that's it. It's that iconic.
That's not right.
But it's not correct.
Right.
But they have, you know, there's no...
You know, I think one of the major problems is the quality of science teaching. It's really not evolution, or I think it's the quality of science teaching, university level as well as school level. You know, you find the same thing in many other topics that have nothing to do with religion. You know, they come in knowing nothing, they come up knowing nothing, and then, you know, this is what happens actually. They do it because they want to pass exams, and then... And I think that the issue of evolution is that, I think the emphasis here is that it's an explanation, and then the emphasis is on teaching science as explanation. And if you really think about evolution as a good explanation, a framework with which you can think about biology, you're improving the quality of science teaching. And if you do it for any other subject, it will also improve the quality of science teaching. But we do not do it, I think. And that's, I think, in the sciences much worse than in the social sciences.
I agree with that to an extent, except evolution is yet even more unique, because kids come out of a high school class in chemistry, they may do poorly in the class, but you ask them, does that stuff work? Do the chemists know what they're talking about? Oh, yeah, it works. Come out of a physics class, even if the student did poorly, you say, the physicists know what they work. You know, the things really fall at 9.8 meters per second squared. Yeah, that stuff works. Kids come out of biology class, the underlying theory, the overarching theme, the glue that holds the entire biology course together, evolution. They go, the textbooks are wrong, the scientists are wrong, and the teachers are wrong. Evolution special. I said to somebody in here, I don't know if you're still here, you asked a question earlier today when we had four participants, you wanted to know if they would disclose who's agnostic, who's atheist, and who's a Muslim believer here today. And we did it with the first four. They agreed to go ahead to do it and disclose. I don't know about all our participants, but I promised that gentleman, I don't know if you're still here, that at the end I would ask all the participants if that's the case. So we'll see if how many will disclose here. Okay, let's start with atheist. Hands up. No. I don't care about you. No. Okay. Agnostics. No, that's you. Okay. Muslim believers.
I'm not a Muslim, so what can I say?
Anyone want to say anything else?
That was my own. I just keep it personal.
I recused myself from that for very specific reasons.
Did you want to say something?
No, because I'm not Muslim.
I know.
You want to say something?
I'm not a Muslim.
Okay, a believer, but not a Muslim.
I always tend to tell my students that I'm a Muslim believer and I accept evolution. That's how I start my classes.
Yeah.
You know, I tend to think about it as two different ways of knowing the world. And I think this is how I think about it. That's, you know, you know the world in a different way in religion than you do it in science, and I think that's a different way of knowing.
Question.
I'm just interested, since this symposium is on Islam and evolution, I would like to hear your views and all your and the research that you've done. With one word, do you believe Islam contradicts evolution or vice versa?
Me?
Especially, yeah, all of them. Especially the non-Muslims.
I don't believe so. My knowledge of the Quran would suggest that Islam would open the forum for acceptance of evolution. They can put me in the category of that and say that the gentleman who said, who was it, Kardavi or someone else, who said, well, if evolution is true, then perhaps Allah put that in the mind of but I do believe my understanding, you know. I challenge the Quran on a daily basis, but related to law, related to women's rights. But when it comes to the issue of evolution, I believe that the Quran provides more opportunity than the other text for acceptance.
I'm going to use my role as moderator here to ask you a clarifying question. Do you want yes or no from each of the participants?
Yeah. That's what I thought. Okay, we got a no.
I was just giving one.
They're not going to be able to do it.
Well, the problem is that there are certain, it depends on your definition of Islam. I mean, if there is a particular tenet, depends on how you interpret it. I mean, if there are things that says man was created by God, if that is the interpretation, yes, it contradicts. If it's not, no. So it depends on how you define it.
And if it is literal, I think it contradicts him.
You're out of
order. Look at
you.
You know, he said he wanted to hear.
No, that was what we're doing.
I think in some ways it's the wrong question. That sort of assumes that there is one thing called true Islam, and we figure out what true Islam is, and then we compare it to what the scientists are saying, and then we figure out whether the answer is yes or no. But if you look at religion as a human phenomenon, you find that there are many varieties of Islam, many different understandings of Islam. And as somebody who's not religious, I don't feel a need to pick out any one of them and say, this is the true version of Islam and the other ones are false. And if you look at it as an outsider, I don't think there's much of a different kind of option. There are just too many varieties of it.
Academics can never give a one-word answer.
Josh. If I have to give a one-word answer, I'm going to say that I don't see an inherent conflict. But I agree with everything Tanner said. And I'm not an Islamist. That's not my field. But certainly when we're dealing with Christianity in the United States, which I've dealt with much more, you know, there are Christian faiths that do set themselves in opposition to evolution. There are forms of Christianity that are absolutely not compatible with religion, and there are forms that are. I don't know which is right in any grand cosmic sense. This is the nice thing about being an agnostic. I don't have to know. I don't need to have answers to these questions. I can just ask. Some people do, some people don't. It's very social science. And so that's fine. And so I would say the same thing about Islam. Some forms probably are not compatible. Some forms probably are certainly. And so it's certainly possible to find a compatibility. And it's not my place to referee who's right and who's wrong.
I'm going to agree with a lot of that. I know too many Muslims who are Muslims just because they also accept evolution. And if you saw my good friends, earlier today talking about, very sincerely talking about his faith and his very high-level work in evolutionary biology, I don't see that there is any inherent conflict at all.
No. You've already done.
But I think, you know, as a non-Muslim, I don't like the way that they go, the Islamic societies go about supporting evolution through the use of the Quran. Because in my opinion, science is always changing, and probably new things will come out in the theory of evolution that might be different. Now, what would you do then? You know, would you change the verses of the Quran to support the new thing? I don't think it should be mixed. Because it is very problematic, because if it changes, then you cannot change the verses of the Quran. So how would you handle it? And as a, you know, somebody who lives in a country that is both, you know, you have both religions, I think then what about if the Christians start using verses from the Bible to support the issues of, then it becomes very problematic. I think it should be separated.
I grew up in a Muslim country and I studied evolution and science, and we never discussed religion in those classes, and evolution was taught very well and I learned it as a zoologist. And in terms of, you know, relationship between Islam and science, I tend to draw on the interpretations of Muslim scholars and Muslim scientists who do not see any inherent conflict between the two. But over here, I work in this context now, so I have to separate the two. When I go back to Pakistan, you know, it's a very different context.
Given that my presentation is about this today, maybe I'll just give a very pragmatic perspective. You know, we all face, you know, I have my father is the youngest of a family of 16. So it's a big family. And so being the youngest, I've had to see actually most of my aunts and uncles pass this world. And we all need a way to deal with, you know, this sort of passing. And people deal with it in different ways. But just pragmatically, I mean, you know, I think that the religion, I mean, I think personally, it just provides, you know, just sort of a very comforting sort of, you know, a sort of pragmatically speaking, it, you know, it practically provides a lot of peace. And I think that's the kind of thing, you know, and then I mean, when you start thinking about the practical perspectives, you know, also publishing in Nature and Science, that's also providing lots of peace. But they both, they both are two activities that take a lot of my time, a lot of my energy, and don't conflict with each other. And in the end of the day, you live your life day by day, and you just want some peace, and think you do what brings you the most peace. And the devil's always in the details. And if we always think about the devil and the details, your brain is going to hurt. So think practically in some ways, and it'll be okay.
I'm just going to assume you want to hear from the moderator. I agree with the late Stephen Jay Gould when he said, a lot of my top scientific colleagues are devoutly religious in a variety of religions, and they're not damn fools, so there's not an explicit reason why they can't be a top scientist and devoutly religious. Yeah?
I have a question for Dr. Yi. I just heard what you said, that's fine, and what I'm going to ask might sound unrelated, even funny or stupid, actually. But you mentioned earlier this morning, since you're a biologist and believer, that when you fast, you actually get closer to Allah, right?
Yes.
Okay, so my question is the following. If a Catholic decides to fast, does he get closer to Allah, or actually Allah disguised as Jesus, in order to convert him eventually to his religion? Or in turn, the agnostic, does, if he decides to fast, gets closer to the physical symptoms of a near-death experience?
Well, I guess so. What the point I was trying to make is that in all forms of religion, there's some commonalities in the sense that they give up some sort of basic, you know, instinct. For Catholics, people can correct me if I'm wrong, but they have Lent, you know, which they give up. So it doesn't have to be fasting per se, but they give up things that are, you know, give up certain things that come naturally to them. And anytime you give up this sort of your ability or your natural instinct, you often, somehow there's this sort of spirituality that comes in. And yes, I mean, if you're an agnostic, yeah, sure, I mean, you'll feel more spiritual. Because I think that's, you know, by giving up your basic instincts, you'll always have some form of elevated spirituality.
So in a way,
I just don't think the agnostic will last very long because you know the motivation may not be there to do this.
We were just trying to make a parallel because of the package, you know, in terms of that everything actually in that sort of belief is the same, you know.
Yeah, I mean, for all three religions, I mean, Judaism, Christianity, Islam, they all have a form of foregoing certain parts of their animal instincts, and when you do that, you know, it makes you further apart from the.
What about the other religions?
They do fast too.
Yeah, no, but there's more than three religions.
Yeah. Well, again, I'm speaking about Islam today, but again, my conception is when humans became humans and they were able to perceive, you know, Allah or a higher power or whatever higher powers, perhaps this is when they became human. That's when they had the ability to make the distinction between their own basic instincts and spirituality. And I think all of the basic religions have some commonalities, some forms that will run through them. I just don't know much about, other than the three basic Abrahamic religions.
Can I continue with the same comment? I think I do agree. I think in general, I really like the idea of not very complex as human beings, and everyone needs to find their own peace, whether they are religious or whatever religious, and that own peace can be different from the world. I'm just one question is, are we overlooking when we compare and try to reconcile evolution with religion in general? Are we overlooking that need of the human beings for that peace? I mean, a lot of people are very, very satisfied with the idea that the day I die, I will be taken care of because I have done this number of things. I mean, not all people do this, but when I come with my evolutionary values and I start to explain to people, and basically I'm telling them, animals or beings in general come and go, they change, and we are one of them, and we are here, and tomorrow we'll go, and that's it. A lot of people will not settle with this. I think that's one of the reasons why there is such an emotional and a strong rejection. It's people are not given an alternative that looks kind of acceptable to them. So how would we reconcile this? Because I'm not very much convinced that evolution is not a threat for religion. In fact, I think there is some kind of conflict. We're not trying to be political about it, and we're trying to be politically correct about it, I should say. But there is a conflict, in my opinion. And for the type of person who needs to be reassured about the afterlife, I think evolution does not give the right answer. I think, in my opinion, that's why it's so difficult to press.
I don't think the science of evolution or science at all is trying to answer that question.
I'm not saying that.
It doesn't give that answer. That's outside of the realm of science to do.
Yeah, my comment is we can reconcile religion and evolution. I'd love to. And I'd love to see children taking evolution course. What I'm saying is, the reason why it's so difficult is because for certain people, it's given the wrong answer to the fears inside them. And this is something we all know. And perhaps that's something we're probably not taking enough into account when we talk to somebody who is religious about evolution.
If I may say something related to the question you posed, if the Quran would allow such thing, right? I just want to make something clear. The language of the Quran is Arabic, right? It's not known to many people. There are people, those that I interviewed in Islamic schools, they recite Quran beautifully. You want to hear it, go to YouTube. Even 5-year-old is reciting the Quran. But the Quran is saying, though, is not known to them. Okay? So what they put their queries into the internet most of the time, or they go to their mosque and they listen to their imams, and they ask their imams or their parents or their teachers their questions concerning perhaps, you know, the Quran and the Quran's position on evolution, or evolution if it's correct or not, right? So just to make that clear, the Quran is Muslims cannot use the Quran as a base to accept evolution, because the Quran, they are not familiar with the Quran. They don't know if they could do it or not. So there are other, but if you ask me, because I'm familiar with it, I don't see any barriers on that.
I actually am very familiar with the Quran, and I see why. I mean, we can discuss a little bit, but I do think there is a conflict.
I just wanted to make one thing clear, that the question of the Quran and accessibility of people to message of the Quran is a question, is something that one should always remember.
Questions? Yes?
Well, for me, I consider religion as a guide to human conduct, rather than as lecturing me about how this happened, how that happened. I have a very defined demand from religion, and that is, how should people treat other people? What would you do when you are in moral dilemma, for example? The objective knowledge outside, I mean, I'm not saying these persons are not objective when you want to talk about human conduct. They are, because they deal with other situations outside your body, outside your mind. So, for me, there is no contradiction. I mean, it doesn't have to be a contradiction between what you want to do in life as a human being and what you want to believe as a rationalist understanding of the external world. The other thing which really impressed me was, I think that Dr. Zaria was talking about, different words used in Quran for creation. There are words which imply indirectly that I'm creating this, or this is created, but it has a potential to advance.
Yes.
And then there is definitely different word used for creating human being, that I think khalaqa
is used.
Yeah. And it's interesting that evolution takes a particular turn after the religion of humans. It becomes more cultural, more social, not in the same way as before. Interestingly, a Russian scientist, Khodorkovsky, he has written book Evolution of Biosphere, and in that he coined another term, noosphere. Noosphere, I think it comes from the intellectual creation. So you have a biosphere, but then there is a separate sphere created who should be more responsible, because there is a rationality in that individual, in that species. So there is definitely a difference between evolution up to apes and evolution of human beings themselves. Interestingly, I was in India not too long ago, and
Let me just stop you right there. I get to define my own words. I'm going to use the word question again, and I mean it in the sense of asking one of our panelists to answer some query you may have, and so forth. So I'll give you the opportunity if you got a question. Otherwise, I'm going to go to question.
Yes, so I guess I'd like to address my question to Dr. Bujud. And I was wondering, Dr. Bujud, what was the most interesting or the most unusual information that you found from your surveys in Lebanon and Egypt?
I think, there are, I can think of at least two things. First, the difference between knowing about evolution and accepting evolution. And I think that's a question that was raised. You know, you have it in the curriculum in Egypt, for example. Students, many of them do well on the exam, they answer the question, but still when you ask them about it, they do not accept the theory. And they say that it conflicts with their beliefs.
The other thing that is more interesting to me is to understand how the cultural context influences your beliefs and not only your religious beliefs. Because I think what I found in Egypt is that, you know, the Christians and Muslims are more similar to each other than they are in Lebanon, and that, I think, could be due to the cultural context in which they are. And so I think this is food for thought, you know. Is it the cultural context in which you are and how others think, or is it what you believe yourself? So those could be the two things.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
The third
one,
I'm
sorry, I'm I want to ask you, I just want to know who you were. Has anyone ever come up to you and told you you're wrong about the conformity of Islam with evolution? And I wonder what you would answer to that.
Well, I think right after my presentation that I made today, and when Brian asked the other moderators, you know, if you know, they were, you know, the other participants, whether they would, you know, if they bought into my sort of reconciliation, there was a clear no there, probably just dissociating themselves from, you know, myself right away. But, I mean, I think, you know, as I said before, I think the devil is in the details. And, you know, and I, on a superficial level, I think they are, you can conform the two. You know, I think if you start getting into the details, you dig deeper, and then you sort of hit a pit in which you no longer know. And that's the point I was trying to make, that these kinds of things are out of the realm of science. You know, the agnostic, the atheist, and the believer are all faith-based positions. And so you dig deeper, and then at some point you can't answer this anymore. And so, I think you can reconcile the two. I mean, I just think, you know, you sort of get into the, you know, at some point when you dig so deep, it becomes hard. And there are challenges. I think there are challenges. You know, some aspects that make you question some aspects. But I think that's the whole goal. I mean, if that's in the Quran, that's what Allah wants you to do. He wants you to ask questions about nature, ask questions, figure out what's going on, how it's happening. And, you know, so the fact that you might accept them on the whole, and the fact that you might find some challenges, shouldn't be the basis to just cut. It's something that you should continue to do. But just realize that you will never find an answer, right? So.
I just realized that this, I'll get to you in a moment, I have to make a little joke. I just realized that the words that he used, I'm not sure an agnostic or an atheist could ever use those words. Quote, the devil's in the details. Just an observation.
I'll just comment. Steven Weinberg has this quote that evolution doesn't make belief in God impossible. It just makes not believing in God possible. So I think that's a crucial thing. Just because accept evolution, and that's the point that we've been trying to make from the beginning, like, that no, just because you accept evolution does not necessitate atheism. But if it does, that's fine. But that's sort of like more in a personal struggle of how you make sense of these things. And these are hard questions, and people deal with that. And I think that's where sort of like the personal nature of belief and religions come in.
Yes, ma'am.
Is it to continue with the Egypt, is because, like, in these countries, they want to restrict not only evolution, education, but all kinds of education, and so in a way they can manipulate their people through religion. And if they open these doors, so people might stop being so manipulative, like they can go out of their control, is what they think maybe.
Which
it's a kind of restriction of education, not only evolution, but all kinds of education, like how many books are translated in the Arab world? Is it origin of speech? Is it translated to Arabic? Is it translated to
In Arabic, actually, it took a long time to translate it, I think. The first few chapters were translated into 1920. And I think it was an Egyptian who...
No, I haven't read it in Arabic.
No, it was translated, I think, 1950 or something. That was the first full edition of Origin of Species got translated. So it is available.
It's there, but it's pretty hard to find. It's there, but it's pretty hard to find.
It's pretty hard to find.
So it just opened other doors, in fact. Opened other doors to people to maybe not believe in God anymore and maybe... do not believe in their government again.
That's where the political context comes in, and also part of the thing that maybe evolution is becoming such a big issue in Islam, part of it is the information accessibility in the last 10, 15 years through the internet and through these type of things. So it's not, evolution sometimes become a symbol, but it's not just evolution, but there are other ideas also that threaten, for example, governments, and then they try to control it and things like that. So that may be the consequences of simple information.
Sorry. I see you perplexing the economy in Minnesota. The scientist that understands Quran, from what I see, is that they have this belief in God. It's another form that created life or evolution. Have you guys thought about making a study to see if Islamic scientists that have cutting edge research and also study or can understand the Quran, like Dr. Red there said, it's pretty hard to really understand the meaning of the verses in the Quran. For example, Kun Fayakun is a pretty... pretty big concept in two words, and that's the power of the Arabic language. So I see the more people I meet that have an understanding of Quran and have an understanding of some basic form of science, they have this connection. They have this, when I say science is my religion, religion is my science. And this is what the doctor over there was talking about. Ten centuries ago, this is what they did, you know. Science and religion were one thing. Ibn Rushd, Ibn Sina, Farabi, Ghazali, all these guys had this basic understanding. So, question back to the survey, have you looked at that or thought about it?
Are you talking about making a survey of devout Muslim scientists?
Yeah, something like that. To see if, it could tell you a lot.
It occurs to me that, what Anila was doing with some of her personal interviews was much along those same lines.
Were they actual scientists living in the West?
Those were actual scientists doing research, evolution research. Most of them have been able to harmonize both. And, the people who I interviewed had a very good understanding of the Quran. Most of them have actually written the textbooks in Pakistan, and they've included the religious text supporting evolution, the idea of Sufism. So most of them, except one or two, actually said that they did not see any conflict between the two. This is a religious scientist.
Just following up on that question, did the scientists who were able to harmonize both, did they feel that they couldn't express that publicly, or that they were not considered a resource to the Ministry of Education or to the universities? Do they write biology textbooks? Do they contribute to them? Do they sort of survey them? Are they being used, I guess, in that context or seeing as value?
Well, they use this, they wrote these textbooks. They've included the religious text. But most of them told me that they face a considerable amount of opposition also from colleagues from other sciences and from other disciplines, and they do not tend to discuss these issues. They tend to avoid conflict, but at their own personal levels, they don't see any problems. Most of them said.
Let me throw in something over there, partially because maybe one of my roles over here is to disagree with everybody. There is a difference between the culture of parts of the scientific community that are based in the West and in Islamic lands. In that, yes, when you look at people who practice science in Muslim countries, they tend to have more of a concern about harmonizing science and Islam They tend to have a more of an outlook saying that, yes, these two things should be done together all the time, they should not be separated. And many of them, in fact, will hearken back to what they consider the golden age of Islamic intellectual life. I think this is a big mistake. And the reason for that is, when you're looking at the kind of science done in Islamic lands, in, say, the glory times, the 12th century, and so forth, this is very, very different from modern science. And an important part of the emergence of modern science from medieval science is particularly making that break and separating scientific concerns from religious concerns. So, to me, it seems like desires to harmonize science and religion to that degree, to have them together intermeshed all the time, is very likely to be a step backwards. Because after all, right now, it is the Western world that has separated the two, that is much more successful in science, and the Islamic world is a disaster area in science.
Okay, he has a response?
Yeah.
he wants to say much.
Well, no, just to follow up on Tanner's point, I think, again, to take a very pragmatic perspective, I mean, I and a practicing scientist, we don't, you know, the thing is, what we're not trying to do is look, like, read the Quran. I mean, even I think in the golden age of science, I think what is, if I understand my history correct, what Islam, the people you mentioned had brought to science is that they were great experimentalists, in fact. The experimental method was largely an Islamic sort of contribution. And so the idea is, it's that, you know, in that culture, in that golden age, there was a lot of encouragement for scientists to go and study nature and to apply this experimental method to nature without necessarily going back and, like, opening the Quran, reading a verse, figuring out what you figured out, going back to the verse, comparing the... I think that's not sort of in the enmeshment. That's not really what's happening on a day-to-day basis. You get this encouragement, okay, Allah, go question Allah's creations, go do this, go that, okay, we figure out this experiment, boom. Do your experiments, you fail, you succeed, you do all this kind of excitement, you publish in Nature and Science, and then bing, you're famous, and that's the end of the day. That's kind of the pragmatic perspective, and this kind of enmeshment is not really the end all and be all. Even I think in the golden age, it's probably not resonant. So. Yeah.
Anila, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I think an interesting observation that I had was that most of the scientists who we interviewed at the university and college levels, they don't tend to discuss religion in class. They said that they tell their students that, you know, this is your personal matter, and they teach them the concept of, you know, evolution, the scientific idea of it. Not at the school level, but at the university level.
Let me just explain to you what I've done.
Yes.
You know, I'm getting these ideas. I'm a biochemist, that's what I do. But when I read something like وَجَعَلْنَا مِنَ الْمَاءَ كُلَّ شَيْءٍ حَيٍّ, we have made out of water everything living, that, you know, that crystallizes my brain. There's something there. So I'm not saying do science and go read the Quran. It's just, you know, it's a combination of things. You just combine these things and you get to a conclusion that science did not refute God. Maybe science just says that there's something out there that we cannot understand.
And people are making sense of them in different ways in different contexts.
Actually, with that, I mean, you are correct in getting an inspiration from the Quran. That's actually totally up to you. But it's the same thing as while doing science, you're reading War and Peace. And you go like, wow, that's really amazing. And you can read a sentence and you go with that. But that doesn't...
Does it talk about Adam and Eve there? I don't think so.
Well, it depends. I mean, it depends on what inspiration or where you are getting it from. What I'm going to say is, like, don't, I mean, the problem that comes in is, like, now if you start looking for science in the Quran, that has been an issue, because then how are you going to find evidence, and what are you going to do with the evidence if it contradicts the way you are interpreting the Quran? Because science is quite unforgiving regarding the testability aspects of it. So in that context, the fact that if you come with the precept that Quran is correct in the first place, then you already have the answer before you are even making any tests. So you cannot get any useful information from the way the modern science works.
I'm not saying you can get some evidence for some understanding. The first word from the Quran is That's all. Read. So what I see, what I understand is that the Quran is telling you, God is telling you, do science, understand it. Just go with you, God. That's
no, absolutely. So that's what I was saying. I mean, you can, I mean, and that is absolutely fine with your inspiration. I mean, if that comes from the Quran, that's great.
Tanner, 60 seconds, go.
Can I jump in really quickly?
Does Dan want it? We only got 5 minutes left.
One of my favorite comments on related issues is actually from Pope John Paul II, who, writing about evolution, said, "Truth cannot contradict truth." And this idea of truth gets very, very tricky when you deal with religion, when you deal with anything. And the analogy to literature is, I think, interesting. Because A Tale of Two Cities, right? This is a book about the French Revolution. If you read it as a history text, though, you're going to be disappointed. You're not going to do well on your French history final. Because it's, you know, they're just, it's true in meaningful ways, in very meaningful ways. But it's not a true history of the French Revolution. He's trying to capture something bigger and more important. And being too literal about it, and this is something that I say to biblical literalists in the United States, gets you in danger of being, of losing the literary, that literary truth that is also there. And so, I'm not saying that that's what you're doing, it's a danger in these discussions of worrying too much about the potential scientific interpretations of a particular line that is poetic and beautiful and meaningful and true in lots of important ways. And, I mean, if some day someone comes up with a way to synthesize life in the lab without using water, does that invalidate the Quran? No, of course not. Right?
Okay, I got 3 more questions, and I'll try to do them in order. This gentleman was next. He had his hand up 15, 20 minutes ago. He forgot his question.
I had a quick question. You mentioned, I forgot your name, but yes. Sorry, but you mentioned in your presentation that it's more cultural than what knowledge they obtain. Do you think that's maybe just because they're only first introduced to the topic in the 9th or 10th grade, which is the same case in Canada, in my case anyway?
No, I think it's much bigger than that. It is the whole cultural context in which the way religion is really it's part of everything that people do, you know, whether it is in school, whether it's outside. So religion is really part and parcel of everything that people do in certain culture, and that, I think, influences everything around you. You know, when you're in school, you have to recite whatever and pray 5 times, and so there is a context. And when you're with other people from other religions who do not do it, whatever you are, you are going to influence by this cultural context. That's what I'm saying. So I think it would stay the same at the university level. This is a hypothesis that I made. I didn't test it. That's a hypothesis, actually.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I think in terms of your final report, it's going to be read in, sympathetically in the Muslim world. You have to be careful how you word things. And I think in terms of this discussion of religion, science professors being religious, I think it would be very important to somehow, together with that, a comparison with Western science professors who are religious and not religious. So they see it's not peculiar to Muslims. And also, of course, it makes a difference. In different countries, there's also the question of the degree of industrialization and so on. By that I don't mean that, you know, the more industrialized, the less religious. It's more complicated than that. But you need to make these issues. And just in terms of personal testimony, I once saw David Suzuki addressing the students at Concordia. I've never in my whole life, and I spent 30 years teaching there, seen masses of students. You know, the main room was packed. There were students watching TV everywhere. Practically every student in the university that came to me was sitting on the edge of their seat responding with massive enthusiasm to Suzuki. That's a fact. And Suzuki is talking about science and religion. So it is a fact in our culture there are some people, you know, who are science professors who are religious in various ways, and there was a response. And I think you need to make that point.
Mm-hmm. Who wants to be the last public question for the day? Oh, you just about looked down your seat. Okay.
may I ask, the question is open to anyone. What is the framework of philosophy of science that you adopt when you create evolution?
Oh, now there's a quick ending. It's a bunch of academics, that sort of philosophical underpinning question.
It's really like fundamental because it's the base of all the discussion.
Well, I mean, just as a practical, I mean, as an evolutionary biologist, I would just say it's the same philosophy of science, often comparing scientific methods that you apply to evolution like you would any other science. So, you know, you make a hypothesis, you test it. If you, you know, if you fail to, you know, fail to find the evidence for something, then you can't. It just goes up.
Well, my job is to disagree, right? You will often hear scientists espouse the sort of Popperian falsifications view of science. But you do have to keep in mind that if somebody's job is to do science in the lab, this does not necessarily mean that they spend a lot of time reflecting on the nature of science. Scientists, in fact, are famous for having naive and mistaken views of the nature of science. And particularly in the case of Popperian falsifications. You will not be able to get away with that if you're talking to an actual philosopher of science.
Yeah, I just want to say that modern philosophy of science has evolved so far after Popper and the modern philosophy of science, according to Lakatos, puts a context for all this discussion. And if you read that, you read Lakatos, and
we've moved a generation and a half behind beyond Lakatos as well.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is the base of understanding what scientific theory is, and which would make a sense of what, how to perform what science is and what religion is, and the answers to the questions, the distinction between what religion is and what science is.
Well, I would say that's partially maybe one of the mistakes over here. We're looking for these really sharp, hard and fast dividing lines saying one side is white, one side is black. The world is a lot more complicated than that.
It's worth noting here that Tanner Salmon and I spent, 3 hours last night playing pool and hanging around talking about this issue. So you're not going to get a fast answer.
No,
we didn't get to the conclusion. So.
Yeah, we haven't answered it yet, obviously.
Yeah,
so
the question is, do you know how to play pool?
One of the things about what we try to do is that try to teach students about the nature of science, so that they would really accept the science as a way of knowledge. To find out that when you ask them about evolution, they use their knowledge of what we call the nature of science to attack evolution. You tell them science is tentative and say, this is the theory, it's tentative. Tentative means it's not a fact, it's not correct, therefore it is incorrect. But I think this is what happened with a lot of the college biology students. You know, they use arguments from the nature of science to support their arguments against evolution. So it's a very complex issue. It's not as simple as you learn the nature of science, so you understand science and you accept it. You learn knowledge and about science, and then you accept the theory. I don't think that we understand this complexity enough until now.
Yeah, the special thing about evolution is just that it's a historical science. Mm-hmm. Events happen once, you never happen again. That's the tricky part that makes it difficult.
Sort of. We do that with astronomy.
that's
historical science.
It has nothing to do with the God.
What?
Big Bang.
No.
Yeah, that's. If you go there.
Well, you can see as a result of this symposium over 2 days, the symposium will be up on the web from that camera tomorrow. Thank you.
Yeah.